My first guest this afternoon is Una Ring, who's the co-founder of Stalking Ireland. It's good afternoon to you, Una.
Good morning. Oh, good afternoon. Sorry, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Listen, your colleague in regards to Stalking Ireland, Eve McDowell, had given a very interesting interview on the Irish Examiner today. Obviously, the top news story throughout the day, and it's really on the top of most people's minds in this country, is Aisling Murphy. The Taoiseach just said earlier today that there is an epidemic of violence against women which needs to be addressed. We know that the killer of Aisling Murphy still remains at large, and Gardaí in Tullamore are continuing to appeal for information. The Taoiseach has also moved to reassure the community, both of Tullamore and the whole country, that every effort is being made to apprehend Aisling Murphy's killer. But tell us a little bit more about the article in particular this afternoon, Una.
Well, like, as you know, myself and Eve were victims of stalking, and we founded stalking.ie there back in April of last year, just after my case went to court. And as people are probably aware by now, there is actually no law in Ireland against stalking. So there's a lot of discussions at the moment about gender-based violence, and the government are saying that they'll do more, but there's not even a law against stalking, which we're trying to get into place, hopefully within the next year or two. It's an extremely slow process.
Now, Una, obviously your situation is different to me mentioning Aisling Murphy, but unfortunately they do fall under the same umbrella, some people may argue. Yourself, Una, what exactly happened to you? Explain to our listeners.
Yeah, well, it was a co-worker that stalked me. I worked with him for 18 months. There was no red flags whatsoever. I got on fine with them. He left our place of employment, and within 2 days he had rang me to know that I'd collect some project material from him from his new place of employment, and I told him to drop it down to the office. He again rang me to know that I'd meet him at his new place of employment to discuss me moving there, and I said no, I had no notion of moving. I was quite happy where I was. He rang me a third time to say that they were having an exhibition or an opening, and would I give him a hand putting out flyers and stuff. So I agreed to meet him in his new place of work early on a Friday morning, February 14, 2020, whereby he locked the door. He assaulted me. He tried to kiss me. He had my arms pinned. I managed to talk him down, and I got out of the building. And the messaging started the following morning, and that continued from February up to April. I reported him to the guards in June because I just was uneasy, even though I hadn't heard anything from him since April. I was just completely uneasy over the whole thing. And then on the 7th of July, I woke up and my car tyres had been spray painted. On the 13th of July, my windows were graffitied with X's and O's, and I Win was written across the windowsill. Following morning, there was a letter left with, there was two condoms in it, and just a very sexually explicit letter. And the guards at this stage had been up a number of times because I reported each incident. There was detectives up, crime prevention were up. I got in CCTV cameras, and we saw him on camera leaving the second letter, which was the explicit threat to break in and rape myself and my daughter. And then, so the guards at that stage, they had been doing drive-bys. At that stage, they set up an operation where they waited outside my house from midnight until 5 a.m. And 4 nights later, he came back. He had a crowbar, rope, duct tape, and a dildo strapped to himself, which he was going to use to rape me. He had a lock-picking device in his car. They found internet searches for chloroform. I had been told to seal my letterbox in case he poured petrol through. And he openly admitted in an interview that he had intended to rape me. But the guards were, the main worry for them was that I would have been able to identify him. He had no flights or a ferry booked for the following day, so they reckoned that there was a high probability that he would have killed me to get away with the rape. And since then, like, I've had counselling, but it's an ongoing trauma, really, where I just don't feel safe outside, inside, day, night, anytime, you know?
I mean, I'm not trying to make you feel unsafe by saying this, but I couldn't even understand how somebody who's gone through what you've gone through would feel safe after something like that.
Yeah, you couldn't. You just can't, you know? It's, you're on alert all the time.
the argument that a lot of people are making who feel defensive about this topic, Una. And unfortunately, in my opinion, unfortunately, there are a lot of people out there who do feel defensive about this topic. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you are, no doubt, because you've been dealing with this for such a long time and obviously the work you're doing with Stalking Ireland. But even I'm sick of saying, only in the past few days, nobody saying it's all men. Nobody has said that. I'm not saying that. You're not saying that. Nobody's saying that. But there is a problem. And we need to obviously address this problem. And people like yourself who go through such traumatic experiences are left to deal with that. And then you have people telling you that, oh, it's not all men. It's not going to happen to everybody, etc., etc. But it doesn't matter. If it happened to one person, that's one person too many. You know, people like Aisling Murphy are now dead. Those people can't come back. And people are not taking the seriousness and the fears that women are living with every single day and are not taking stories like yourself serious enough to do something about this.
No. And you see, there is a perception, and there always has been, that women enjoy being catcalled, being whistled at, that it makes them feel attractive. It doesn't. It makes us feel scared. It makes us feel uncomfortable. And until that perception has changed, and there is a small minority of very, very bad men, and they're the people who are involved in these stories. The vast majority of men are very, very good, but they actually need to do more. You know, don't walk by if there's a group of young fellas whistling at a girl. Just pull them up on it and say, hey, that's not okay. It's the good men in the country that have the ability to make changes, and these changes are going to take generations. We've seen a change, you know, with homophobia. We've seen a better acceptance. We've seen a change, unfortunately not a complete change, with racism. There's a bit more acceptance there. And this gender-based violence, until the good men of the country pull up the bad men of the country, like, that's where the help comes in. Like, women are always going to have to protect themselves. That's a given, and it's awful that we have to do it, but we have to do it because we're the ones who have to look after ourselves. But it's the men who can make a change. Educate your sons, educate your brothers, educate your neighbours' kids. If you see them whistling at a girl, just say, look, you can't do that. That's not okay. You know, and that's how things will change.
And, you know, it's funny that you say educate, because it just so happens I was speaking about this topic on, I think it was Wednesday or Thursday morning, and I said about men being educated, and a few people did take offence to what I said. And with topics like this, people are always going to be on different sides, you know, and unfortunately are going to be, you know, arguments and, I guess, butting of heads. That's what happens with big topics like this. But the crux of the education doesn't mean that you are potentially a perpetrator or that people potentially think that you could be a perpetrator. It just means, as you're mentioning there, I made the point, I'm not a black person. I'm not a trans person. I have to educate myself when it comes to those topics. So in terms of gender-based violence, men need to educate themselves more. Yeah. It's not saying that they don't have struggles in their life, but today, and when incidents like what happened to Aisling Murphy happened, that is the time to talk about it. Because I'm sure in 8 weeks' time, 2 weeks' time, there'll be a reason to not talk about that. That doesn't take away from the importance of lots of men's issues out there that just affect males in this country.
And I mean, I suppose, like, from my point of view, we'll say the majority of men, they pull into a petrol station and they go into the shop and it doesn't cast them a thought. I pull into a petrol station, I check around before I get out of the car. I come out of the shop. I check around before I walk to the car. I check the back of the car to make sure nobody's gotten in. I get into the car. I press the central locking straight away. Like, it's there all the time. There's nowhere that I can go that I don't do, I suppose, a risk assessment before I either leave the house or leave the car or walk down the street, day or night. It doesn't matter. I'm constantly on high alert. And I think that there's a lack of understanding from a male point of view, because they don't have to do that. They just go about their day, you know, and they don't have to worry every time they leave the house that they're going to be killed or raped or assaulted or, you know, and there's a huge lack of understanding because they haven't had to deal with it. They haven't had to be conditioned to it. And I was watching Primetime last night, and the most shocking part for me was the statistics. 13% of women are killed by strangers. I would have imagined that it was 6 or 7%. 13% is a huge, huge number. And like that just shows how unsafe people are in the country.
Una, I think it's messages like this sometimes when they do come from the opposite sex, they don't go down as well. And you're mentioning it's about men educating men. And we had Keith Walsh here on air yesterday afternoon discussing, the broadcaster discussing from his point of view how he feels about this. And he was basically saying the exact same thing as you've said this afternoon. But if there's any men out there listening who are finding it hard to understand what's been spoken about over the past few days, just give a little bit more light in terms of your personal story and how now, unfortunately, you view men as you've mentioned, it's not all men. It's one man in your circumstance. But unfortunately, that has had an effect on male figures in your life, I'm sure, due to that one bad experience.
Absolutely. And I mean, when I'm, we'll say, walking out the beach and I see a man coming towards me, like, the problem is I don't know if he's a good man or a bad man, you know, and he could be either. And I mean, just because the majority of men are fantastic, and I'm sure they're appalled and probably a bit embarrassed at, like, I would hate to be a man in this country today. I really would, you know, because it's just, it's an embarrassment for them that somebody now again has gone out and done this horrendous crime, and they're all kind of being tarred with the same brush. But the bottom line is that men are the problem when it comes to violence against women. And that's what needs to be addressed. I was up in Leinster House back in September, and it was all female politicians, bar one male politician. And we were chit-chatting, and he was aghast at what we were talking about how the one girl used to run home from college, how another girl used to run out with her bin. Like, he said he actually didn't realise the extent of the fear that was there. And he was embarrassed by it. But he said the problem was that he didn't know. And he said because he had never had to deal with it, he didn't know it existed. And I think that's the case with a lot of men. Because they have never had to live their life in fear, they don't understand the level of the fear among women in the country. And it's them that can change the future, because this isn't going to change in the next 5 or 10 years. This is going to take a generation or two. And if we can educate them, people from a very young age, even just about respect, respect for women, respect for their sisters, for their mothers. And if they see their father as being respectful at home, they'll automatically pick that up. But if they're out with their father or their brother and they're seeing them, oh, look at your one, look at the legs on your one, they're going, that's instilled to them. And it's instilled to them that behaviour is okay. And therein lies the problem.
Una Ring, it's a very complex, it's a topic that could be spoken about for a very long time, and I really appreciate you coming on and obviously discussing your story, which is completely traumatic, and I can't fathom it. I can't fathom what, you know, Aisling Murphy's loved ones are going through at the moment. And I thank you so much for coming on and again sharing your story with us, and hopefully we'll be speaking to you again on behalf of the co-founder of Stalking Ireland with some better news, I guess, in terms
of
work over the next few months. So thank you very much to Una Ring, the co-founder of Stalking Ireland there. Now, I did mention a little earlier on that the secretary to Councillor Chris Pender, who is Niamh Pender, is joining me to discuss a tweet she sent out yesterday. And I believe you should be there on the line now, Niamh. And unfortunately there now, Niamh is not on the line. So I am just going to bring to you the vigils that are currently taking place across the county for Aisling Murphy. So there will be a candlelit vigil from 4 o'clock at the Liffey Linear Park in Newbridge, at Maynooth Square also at 4, Market Square in Blessington at 4, Clane Church at 4, Lock 27 along the Canal Bank in Athy, that's under the Swan Mural, that's at 4. Leak Slip at the Fountain opposite Spar from 4. At 4:30, there's a candlelit vigil in Kilcullen. 4:30, sorry. And in the square in Kildare Town at 4:30, there's also a candlelit vigil from 6. A vigil in Kilmeag, that was where the Christmas tree was. Clane Athletic Club track at 6. The Canal in Robertstown also at 6. The Harbour in Naas at 6. A vigil will take place in Kilcock at 6. That procession will begin along the canal bank from the park run start to Allen Bridge, and it finishes at the ramp onto the OR 148 main road. And then from 6:30 at the walking tracks in Ballyteague, a vigil will be held. And then from 7:00, In Salins on the Millbank side of the bridge, there will be a vigil at Kilchurch also at 7 and Carberry GAA at 7. And there's also vigils going on across the country. And you can get some more information on kfmradio.com and also elsewhere in terms of the national vigils. And again, it's just rest in peace to Aisling Murphy. Now, just before the break, I was mentioning that the Secretary to Councillor Chris Pender, Niamh Pender, tweeted out an offering help to the women of Newbridge. And she joins me now on the line to discuss this. Hi, Niamh.
Hi, Ciara. How are you?
Good. I'm good. Thank you very much. So obviously we know the situation with Aisling Murphy's death. Majority of women across this country, and obviously men, because they have women in their life that they're thinking of and worried about, are on edge due to this situation. And it was really nice seeing your warmth and your idea, as Councillor Chris Pender did note, for the women of Newbridge. If they're out and about in the town and ever feel alone, need to call somebody, etc., you put out a lovely tweet. It was really nice.
I'm sure you yourself, Ciara, know what it's like to, you know, be on your own, or even like something insignificant, like just waiting for a lift. Like I know myself, there's been many times that I've, you know, felt a bit uneasy in the area that I was and wanted to pop in somewhere, but you just feel like you can't, like not in shops or anything like that. It's just, we have the opportunity to offer that to women and girls in the town, and me and Chris, it was a unanimous decision to just say, absolutely, we need to provide this space.
Yeah, it was a great idea. And you also noted that Chris Pender's office, the air code, which is W12PD35. That's for anybody out there who are either from Newbridge or ever in the Newbridge area needing help.
Yeah,
you might be at the shops or whatever. And also Chris's number. Can we give that out?
Yeah, that's 0858298237.
Now, addition to any help or roof over the one's head that's needed while it rains or waiting for a lift, etc., you also have sanitary products on offer, cereal bars, central heating.
Yeah, we have everything. I think that when I first came in to help Chris, me and Chris decided that like we needed that stuff, not only for me, but period poverty is another huge issue for women in this country, and we have loads of sanitary products, loads of them. Like we're nearly like toppled in with them at this point. So, and anyone can take them. Somebody doesn't even have to call in to sit in and take them. You can come in and ask for someone. There'll be no questions asked whatsoever. And another point that I'd like to mention is that we're very close to the schools as well. You'll probably see that if you put it into the air code, like Holy Family, I can see if I step out the door. The college is just down the road, and then St. Columba's Community College is literally just up the road. So it would be a good opportunity as well if parents are running late, stuff like that. So
that's great. That's a great idea, because as we know, like parents often run late, and especially like
and
in
the
winter
traffic,
months.
Like, yeah,
and it's not great. Nobody, I don't even think most guys probably don't really feel that safe out at night.
No.
It's just a natural feeling most people have. So, thank you so much, Niamh, for coming on and joining us,
no problem.
And
for
your idea as well. It's so nice, I guess, out of something awful, something like this is such a nice thing to see. But again, it's just RIP to Aisling Murphy, and our thoughts are with her loved ones. And we have had some text here on the line, 0833 97 97 97. Somebody texted in saying, with all due respect to Una, who was my first guest, Una Ring, the co-founder of Stalking Ireland, how does she know it was a man in terms of Aisling Murphy? I believe, texter, that the guards have been given descriptions in regards to that. So yeah, if anybody else has text, do get in touch with us this afternoon, 0833 97 97 97. Joining me is the helpline manager with Free Legal Advice Centre, FLAC, as they're known as. And they have seen the helplines a significant increase in calls about marriage breakdown and divorce since Christmas, with most coming from women. It's good afternoon to you, Erin.
Hi, how's it going? Thanks, Liam, for taking the call.
Well, thank you for taking the call, I should say. So divorce and separation, it says here, is, in quotes, by far the biggest category within family law at 41% in terms of getting in touch with FLAC.
Yeah, like I suppose in 2020, we would have seen a big increase arising from restrictions and all the pressures that would have put on marital relationships and cohabiting relationships. And at that point, for 2020, 27.5% approximately of queries were relating to family law matters. That has significantly increased as restrictions have gone on. And we now find ourselves in a situation where 35% of calls to our helpline in the first week of January related to family law matters, and separation and divorce would be a huge proportion of those calls. Specifically, I suppose, commencing a separation or trying to get information as to where people can go, what are their entitlements, what are the grounds for judicial separation or a divorce. So seeking information in relation to that kind of marital situation or a long-term cohabiting relationship.
Erin, is there ever a blurring of the lines in terms of the helpline? Like, are men and women getting in touch, would say at a time like Christmas, when, you know, the majority of Ireland shuts up shop for those few days and you don't know what day of the week it is. And these people may have had, you know, intense, you know, awkward, unpleasant Christmas periods, and they're looking for help wherever they can, and sometimes maybe reaching out to FLAC, maybe not exactly looking for legal advice as such. Or is it purely people are literally coming with exact legal questions to ask yourselves over, would say, the Christmas period just gone?
It would be very specifically legal questions that would give rise to the call. Oftentimes, as a secondary issue, they would also be suffering severe stress, emotional pressures, etc., that would give rise to obviously mental health issues and strain. But most people, if not the majority, would be contacting us with a specific legal query regarding a breakdown of a relationship, if we're referring specifically to family law queries. And in a situation like that, I mean, the gender breakdown, we would experience calls from obviously both genders, but our men and women in relation to family law matters. We just have seemed to notice an increase in queries relating to women wishing to make inquiries regarding what are the legal options available to them if they wish to commence a separation or a cohabiting relationship breakup. And in a situation like that, it seems to be women mainly that have contacted us, but we equally would receive a huge amount of queries from men as well who might wish to commence proceedings or defend any proceedings or have received such proceedings.
Now, it's noted that many of these calls are complex, as I can imagine, and can last up to 45 minutes. Are there enough people within FLAC able to deal with that? Because 45 minutes is a huge period of time.
Look, we're an NGO and obviously we have limited resources. We wish we could provide far more information. We provide information on the information line as to what options are there, the general outline, where people require specific legal advice clinics. We're very, very lucky that we have a huge amount of volunteers with family law experience or who are practicing family law solicitors, who very generously give their free time to volunteer in family law advice telephone clinics, which were established as a result of the restrictions where the clinics face-to-face that would have previously operated couldn't proceed or couldn't continue. But if anybody was a family lawyer or a family solicitor and is listening to this and would wish to volunteer with FLAC, like, I couldn't emphasise the need that we would have for such experience. But we will never probably meet the need that's there, because we are an NGO. We can only provide limited, our resources are limited, and we will not, as things stand, be in a position to always meet the requirements that are there. And marital relationships, the delay in applying, the breakdown of marital relationships or cohabiting relationships, other family law issues, the difficulty in accessing legal aid, the waiting lists that are there for legal aid, means there are a number of factors driving family law queries and queries to contact FLAC, information line for information, and the FLAC advice telephone clinics for advice.
Now, the maximum disposable income, just to let people know, a person can have to be eligible for legal aid is €18,000 a year. And in the plan for 2021, the Department of Justice committed to review civil legal aid scheme and bring forward proposals for reform by the third quarter. But we know that the Justice Department has yet to announce a review. Have yourselves at FLAC been, I guess, on the backs of the Justice Department pushing them in terms of that?
Well, I would direct anybody to our our FLAC website to see what movements we'd be making with regard to the review. I mean, we would obviously love a review to proceed as quickly as possible, and the department as well are aware of FLAC's view on this, as well as a number of other parties and organisations who have made the same request. The access to legal aid is a real barrier to commencing a family law proceedings. to proceeding with the best possible advice, to proceeding expeditiously, and the knock-on effect for society as a result of parties not being fully equipped and proceeding through a family law contested separation or divorce, for example, can't be underestimated. You know, you wouldn't expect somebody to, I suppose, wire their own house without, if they weren't an electrician. And then people who don't or can't avail of legal aid or don't qualify may not be in a position to discharge private legal costs, then are left in a very, very difficult position where they have to proceed as lay litigants into a court where they may not be fully equipped and can only not be fully equipped because they won't be lawyers, they won't be barristers, they won't be solicitors. So they won't be in a position to know as well as they should or should be in a position to know what their legal entitlements are. And you have to assume that somebody is going to come out at the end of a process as a lay litigant in a family law matter, perhaps or likely not to be in the position that they would be in had they had legal representation.
Erin Brogan, before I let you go, could you please give us the helpline number for FLAC?
Sure. The FLAC information line is 01-906-1010. And I should say that just as has been outlined, we're experiencing a huge amount of demand for our services at the moment and calls. So if you don't get through, just please keep trying. And you will get through eventually, and we'll get back to you as soon as we can with any further information or advice clinics if we have to arrange those.
Okay, well, the helpline manager with FLAC, Erin Brogan, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon. Now, getting back to some texts that are coming in, 0833 97 97 97. Somebody says here, vigils, yes, they are a mark of respect and not a nice thing to do, but they are not going to bring that girl back or change the laws here. You mark my words, it's a sad day to have to say it, but this time next week there won't be a word about that girl like all the others that were murdered. It's unreal. I'm fuming over it all, like everyone, because there will not be one thing done about it until the people who are supposed to be running this country change the laws. And does it now, not not next year or whenever. It needs to be done now. It's not rocket science. It's a big job to change the law. And it is. And I assume that it unfortunately does take time if laws were to change. But I think as well, you know, even moving away from the laws, and thank you, Texter. Unfortunately, I don't have your name here, but thank you for getting in touch. Even just moving away from the laws, it does still have the room for people to learn more about what other people are going through and about the fears and worries and how we can make this society a better one and a safer and happier one in general. And both men and women have so many issues. It obviously cannot be said, but in terms of this gender-based violence, obviously the majority of people being affected are women. Our final topic of this afternoon, Dr. Vincent McDerby joins me, the president of the Psychological Society of Ireland. Hi, Vincent, how are you?
Not too bad, now yourself.
Good. Thank you very much. Listen, you are calling on the Minister for Health, and that's you as in the Psychological Society of Ireland, to address the disparity in funding for psychology trainees.
Yes. I suppose most people just hear the term psychologist, but within the public system, there's kind of, I suppose, three different types of psychologists that you see working, and they're clinical psychologists, education psychologists, and counselling psychologists, and they will work in the hospitals and CAMHS and primary care, the schools, across a range of settings. And I suppose the issue is that there's a disparity of funding among the three groups. So, I mean, to all the training for clinical counselling and education psychologists, They're all 3-year doctorate level training, and to get on these training courses, as well as having to have a degree in psychology, you have to have a postgrad, you know, a master's level or higher. And usually people have to have to work a number of years in the experience as an assistant psychologist. So by the time people get on these doctorate courses, they're well advanced in their career. You know, they're usually at least in their late 20s. But trainees who get on the clinical courses, they get 60% of their fees paid, and they get a salary. Whereas trainees who get on the educational or the counselling psychology courses, they have to pay their full fees, which is between 12,000 and 15,000 per year, and they don't get any funding at all. Now, all these trainees, it's a traineeship, so they work. You know, they do a massive amount. It's all on placement. So they work in schools, and they work in the HSE, and they work in CAMHS, you know, providing assessments and psychological services to adults and children. And these trainees are essentially doing it for free for 3 years. So it's leading to psychology almost becoming an elitist profession. There's only certain people can afford it. Afford to undergo this
and
training.
As well, there's only certain people, unfortunately, Dr. McDerby, that can afford to even attend a psychologist if they can't get one, you know, through the health service. But if the pandemic has taught us anything, it's that so many of us have had time to sit back and, I guess, spend a lot of time just with ourselves and notice how counselling and therapy in general can be so beneficial to so many people's lives. So the Psychological Society of Ireland calling on this is actually going to help the wider public in the long term.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, we need more psychologists. I mean, you know, mental health has been under-resourced in this country for years. And, you know, I can speak specifically in relation to psychology. Even before COVID, we had a significant shortage of psychologists, and we have an issue with recruitment and retention of psychologists for a number of different reasons. And as a result of the pandemic, there's been a massive increase in referrals, which is putting huge pressure on already stretched resources. So we do need more psychologists. I mean, you know, when you have something like a pandemic, you know, we've had nothing like this before, but we know from, you know, similar kind of mass events like, you know, natural disasters and terrorist attacks like that, you know, in the aftermath, we usually see an increase in referrals to mental health services by you know, 20 to 25%, and we're seeing at least that in Ireland across the board. So we do seriously need more psychologists on the ground.
And would you even argue, Vincent, that more people need to apply for psychology and psychology-like courses when they are attending third level?
Well, I don't think that's what the problem is. I mean, what's interesting is, you know, psychology at undergrad is one of the most studied undergrad
in demand,
worldwide. It's one of the most undergrad in demand. So there is, you know, there is a lot of space. It's in demand, but there is a lot of space, and there's a lot of different entries. It's not just through the CEO. There's a number of different entries into undergrad psychology courses, and like the vast majority of people who study psychology at undergrad, they won't necessarily go on and do, you know, your typical maybe counseling, clinical education, you know, psychologists. They'll often move into other fields because psychology is applicable in so many other areas. So it's not at undergrad level that the issue is. It's at these postgraduate courses. That's where we're not graduating enough psychologists.
Okay, well, I really appreciate you coming on and speaking to me this afternoon. That's the president of the Psychological Society of Ireland, Dr. Vincent McDerby. Take care of yourself and thank you for joining me. And you take care of yourself. I hope you have a lovely weekend. It's Friday, thankfully, many of us may say, and you're able to relax, chill out and enjoy the weekend as much as you can.